Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we're going to talk about self-leadership across the board. We're going to talk about making your creative mark and achieving your artistic goals and turning customers into buyers using a social media tool, which I'm interested in learning more about. And today's guests are all very successfully leading the way their way on, are leading the way on their chosen paths. It would help if I could speak today. I'm having one of those days where I keep stuttering. So whether you're facing a career, business, or personal struggle, my second guest today, a businesswoman, Michelle Ray, says the strategies she provides on self-leadership are game-changing. And whether you're a writer, painter, designer, or actor, creative coach, and a prolific creator himself, Dr. Eric Maisel shares proven keys and techniques to achieving your artistic goals. He's written more than 40 books on creativity and the psychology surrounding it, and he's been on the show a couple of times before. We're going to talk about his new book today. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome somebody who has a very interesting background. Karen Leland is the president of Sterling Marketing Group, a branding and marketing strategy and implementation firm for entrepreneurs, small businesses, and Fortune 500. Her clients include all the big ones, AT&T, Apple, American Express, and more. And she's spoken for the Young Presidents Organization, the American Management Association, and Direct Marketing Association. She's been interviewed many times by major publications, including the New York Times, Fortune, Oprah, CNN, and the Wall Street Journal. And she has a blog she blogs for entrepreneur.com, the Huffington Post, and Psychology Today. .com, among others. Karen's written a new book called The Ultimate Guide to Pinterest for Business. And Karen Leland, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I'm pleased to have you. I'm interested in learning more about this because, you know, I look at everything when it comes out, as you said you do in the book. But your husband pointed you, I think, in the direction of Pinterest, and you were like, oh, no, not another social media tool.
It's true. I mean, we would lie in bed at night, and he would be on his iPad, and he would be saying, oh, look at this image that got pinned, and look at this. And at first, I was sort of like, oh, yeah, whatever. And then I thought, you know, I am a marketing and branding consultant. I probably ought to know what's going on out there. And this was early on. And so he started showing me Pinterest, and I started getting really fascinated by it because it was, it's a part of this whole trend of the visual web, and I saw the way it was functioning and operating, and I thought it really had some interesting legs and potential. And in fact, today it's the third largest social media site in the U.S. after Facebook and Twitter.
Well, I'm glad we're talking today because, you know, I work in communications, strategy, marketing, and I look at Pinterest, and I wasn't terribly interested in it when I looked at it. I did open an account and I kind of played around with it a little bit. So tell me first off, why you jumped on the Pinterest bandwagon. What is it that appealed to you?
Well, I mean, one thing is because I deal with businesses all the time and I'm dealing with their social media and their marketing and their branding, I was interested in it because it was clear to me it was becoming a very popular player. So just from a pure understanding what was going on in the industry point of view, I became interested in it. But personally, you know, I'm a photographer. I love photography. I was trained as an artist. Even though that's not what I do for a living, I was trained as an artist. And so I loved the idea that you could put visuals up. And so just from a personal perspective, I became interested in it. And then when the statistics started coming out on who the demographics were for it, I thought, oh, this is an interesting social media site for business. It has business potential in the future.
Mm. So for people who are out there thinking, what the heck is Pinterest?
Well, here's the simple explanation. So I don't know about you, but for me, like every January 1st or 2nd, I usually sit down with glue sticks and scissors and a bunch of magazines, and I cut out pictures and do sort of a vision board for the year on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. Pinterest is a little bit like that, except for without the glue sticks. So what it is it's a visual pin board. So if you imagine like just a poster board or a pin board that you would pin postcards to, it's a very similar idea. You're pinning images electronically to different boards on different topics within your particular account. So let's say I'm a big fan of dark chocolate, and I've actually written a lot of articles on dark chocolate. So I have a board on dark chocolates, and I pin images of my favorite dark chocolates. And then in the pin descriptions, I write who the chocolate is, where you can get it, a few points about it, etc. So you can have pin boards on pretty much almost any topic.
So where do businesses come into play? Because, you know, I see the visual aspect of it. You know, as a writer myself, I sometimes wish there were better ways of showing visually. sometimes photographs are included and sometimes not. But for a business that's, let's say, a storefront, somebody actually has a storefront, how do you work with them to determine how it's going to help them?
That's a great question. And the thing I always tell people is before they really get on Pinterest seriously as a business decision, you have to look and see if who's on Pinterest matches who your demographic is. So, for example, 70% of the people on Pinterest are women ages 25 to 44. So if that's a demographic that your business serves, then Pinterest might be a useful place for you to be. Also, the most popular categories on Pinterest are women's fashion, food, do-it-yourself, craft, home decor. All of those are hugely popular on Pinterest. So let's say you had a storefront that was specializing in women's clothing, and you could obviously ship anywhere.
Karen,
yes.
We're getting a terrible kickback on the call here, so I'm going to interrupt you because I want people to hear this. And we're going to call you back, I think, on a different line. Will that work, Eric?
Sure.
All right, we're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be right back with you. My guest in this segment is Karen Leland. The book is Pinterest for Business, and we'll be right back as soon as we get a better connection.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Coming up June 3rd on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Feeding the Hungry Ghost with Ellen Kaner, who takes an irreverent approach to bring reverence into everyday living. Tune into Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. And check out conversationslive.net for more than 200 podcasts.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Remember, you're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest is Karen Leland. We are talking about Pinterest today for business, and how you can help convert customers to buyers. Hopefully, Karen, we've got a much better line now, because I really wanted listeners to hear this. That's why I wanted to break and call you back. So we were talking about, you're talking about demographic right before we went to the break, or how you look at your audience, etc.
Yeah, and so if you look at the demographics on Pinterest, 70% are women ages 25 to 44, and the most popular topics on Pinterest are things like ladies, women's fashion, food is very popular, do-it-yourself craft is very popular, home decor is very popular. So if you have a business that meets that demographic and is in one of those areas, Pinterest is probably a great place for you to get exposure to your audience. So you were asking about a storefront. So if you had a women's clothing store, storefront, but you also could ship and sell things online. Pinterest is probably a great place for you to be because that would, you know, you have one of the top categories on Pinterest, and if you're serving women 25 to 44, then you've got your, you know, your market is there. And so really, depending on who your market is, Pinterest can be a fabulous way to build your brand, to get word out about your business, to drive traffic to your site, and to actually have flow through to sales.
Yeah, one of the things I liked about the book was you actually look at people's jobs, at people's careers or industries, if you like, and made suggestions for how people in certain careers are using this. I thought that was very useful. So once, if I decide I want to go ahead and use Pinterest, you say, first of all, we need to strategize and pin second. So look at our objectives. So give us a high-level overview of what kind of things we're looking at there.
So when I wrote the Ultimate Guide to Pinterest for Business, one of the things I wanted it to be was I wanted it to be a book that would be useful from a social media perspective, not just a how-to of Pinterest. And so one of the things I think is critical with any social media is actually that you strategize first before you jump in and do anything. And part of it is you want to step back and ask yourself as a business, you know, are you looking, what are your marketing goals? Whenever I start with a client, that's one of the first things I'll ask them. Are you looking to have Pinterest drive more traffic to your website? Are you looking to boost your brand awareness with Pinterest? Are you looking to actually increase sales? Are you looking to expand your customer engagement? Are you looking to bond more with your brand fans? You know, depending on what your social media needs are, what your marketing goals are, that's what allows you to determine what kind of boards you want to create, what kind of images you're going to pin. You know, I think we live in a world where social media kind of tugs at our sleeve daily, like, you know, that plant in the Little Shop of Horrors? Feed me, Seymour! Sometimes I feel like that's what social media is. So, you know, you need a good reason to put time into a new social media site. So you want to make sure that your strategic goals and the way Pinterest works are a good match.
Yeah, and I think also strategizing helps you save time because, as you said, it's very easy to go down the rabbit hole when you're on social media.
Exactly.
One thing leads to another and yet another. And so one of the things that I liked you talk about, you know, how to create inviting boards. And you talk about some statistics about managing and balancing percentages, 40% instructional and educational and 20% about your brand. So talk to us about that, if you would.
Yeah, when you're building boards and when you're pinning, it's really important that you don't make it all promotional. So a good sort of strategy to follow or a good percentage to follow is if about 40% of your boards are inspirational or motivational. That could be quotes, that could be inspirational pictures, that could be motivational pictures, it could be motivational videos. But if about 40% of your pins and boards are inspirational and motivational, then 40% of your pins or boards should be educational and informative. So how-to information, educating people, giving information. Then 20% of your pins and boards can be about your brand or your product and promoting yourself, meaning information about your company, information about your brand, information about your service. If you limit it to about 20%, that's a pretty good ratio because people are on Pinterest mostly for information, inspiration, and those interesting, beautiful, unique images. And so you don't want to overpromote because that will create sort of a negative backlash against your Pinterest.
Right. So let me ask you this, because many people are into many things now. They have multiple profit centers. They get their income from, you know, various, several different areas. You yourself, I mean, you are a brand strategist, marketing strategist. You are also, I read, I have paintings, prints, and photography shown in art festivals. You also do voiceover work. So when somebody is into many different things, how do you recommend they put their brand together? Do you recommend they have one board? Because on each Pinterest board or page, if you like, there is, you can have as many different content buckets as you want. Do you recommend they have separate accounts or put it all on one page?
Well, I think that it's of greater benefit to have one Pinterest account. And remember, on one Pinterest account, you can have many different boards. And what actually works is to make your boards niche. So I have one Pinterest account, you know, Karen Leland Sterling Marketing Group. It's my brand. And I have boards on how to promote a book. I have boards on time management because I've written a time management book. I have boards on personal branding because I do a lot of personal branding work. But I also, as I said earlier in the interview, have a board on favorite dark chocolates. So, you know, because it's good to have a little bit of your own personality in there
right.
in terms of what you do, especially if you are an entrepreneur or a small business owner or an expert, if you're an individual. You know, if you're Coca-Cola or if you're Whole Foods, you're probably not going to have a board that's too personal. But for example, even Whole Foods has a fabulous board that's on their Whole Kids Foundation and what they're doing with that. So it's really about having segmented, specialized boards about different things and that are by niche topic. And I think for sure it's a great idea to have some boards that are personal. Now, obviously, you have to be smart, and the personal stuff you show has to be something you wouldn't mind a client seeing. Like, I don't mind my clients knowing I'm a chocoholic. That's not a problem for me. It might increase the likelihood they'll buy me some chocolate as a gift, so I'm actually all for it.
Well, we're almost at the end of our segment, but I can't let you go without, you know, since we're talking about Pinterest for Business, we can't let you go without talking about return on investment. We're putting time and effort into this. So how do we analyze our metrics? How do we tell if this is working for us?
Well, I will say that Pinterest has a whole metrics built into it currently now, but just one statistic. The average online order from a Pinterest user is $179 compared to $80 for a Facebook user and $69 for a Twitter user. So we know that people, if they find something they want to buy on Pinterest, will buy it and they will spend the money. So that's sort of one metric. But when you sign up, you actually can get access to metrics to see how people are using your Pinterest and what's being repinned. I do want to say that I have some more information on that on my website for free at www.karenleland.com. There's a cheat sheet called 50 Ways to Get the Most Out of Pinterest, and people can go and download it from the site, and that has some additional detailed information on it about that.
That's awesome. Karen Leland, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate your time today.
Vicki, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And Karen's book, again, is called Pinterest for Business, Master the A to Z Guide on Using Pinterest in Your Profession. This is actually the best book I've seen on Pinterest. So if you're at all curious about looking, check it out. Pinterest for Business, Karen Leland. And you can find more at KarenLeland.com. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find out about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.
Some people know a good thing when they hear it. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Before I introduce my next guest, I should give you the full name of Karen Leland's book. It's called The Ultimate Guide to Pinterest for Business. The Ultimate Guide to Pinterest for Business. But it pops straight up on Google if you look for it. Well, we are talking right now with Michelle Ray. And she's the founder and CEO of the Lead Yourself First Institute. She's very much in demand as a speaker, trainer, and consultant, and has worked with a wide variety of clients, helping them create effective business relationships and positive workplaces. Wouldn't that be nice if we had more positive workplaces? She was born in Australia and lives in Vancouver, British Columbia. But you're joining us from New York today, Michelle.
That's right.
And I want to let listeners know your book, the book by Michelle Ray, is called Lead Yourself First, Breakthrough Strategies to Live the Life You Want. So talk to us a little bit about leadership, first of all, because I always say there's a huge difference between a supervisor and a manager and a leader. And you approach the subject of leadership from a personal perspective and say leadership is first and foremost a state of mind, not a job title.
Yes. And, you know, coming back to what you just said about being a manager and being a leader, I think there's
absolutely a parallel when you talk about personal leadership, because someone who's capable and of leading themselves recognizes that they have a vision for themselves, and that's what I mean by having the right mindset and seeing leadership as a state of mind. And I think every one of us can tap into our own innate ability to lead ourselves when we know how, or when we may realize that circumstances that are happening in our lives are forcing us to look at our lives, our work lives, our career, our personal situations differently. So can we rise to the challenge?
Right. And if we learn to lead ourselves, life does become much easier, because we're still going to have challenges. We're still going to have hills and valleys. But if we can lead ourselves and conduct ourselves in that way, life does become somewhat easier, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, every day we get tested, and, you know, no one is immune from those tests and challenges, no matter how one may see one as being successful. So things constantly happen. And I think the difference between someone saying, why is this happening to me, versus why is this happening, is a big difference. And I think it's really good to know how to look at life the second way.
Right. So that's a good point and a good segue into what I wanted to ask you next. So somebody is going through an experience and they're saying, you know, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening? What should we be asking ourselves? How should we be dealing with that?
Well, I think that the key, and this is where it's really, you know, it's all great to talk about it, but then, you know, we really have to face the challenge, or when we're putting ourselves to the test, is to see the adversity or the challenge as an opportunity. And, you know, I know that some people might think, well, that just sounds like a, you know, a little bit of psychobabble, but the fact is that there really is a reason for everything. And when we are dealing with a situation that just seems so unpalatable and, you know, we can't believe we're going through it, it's rare that we would, you know, be able to look at it and say, well, maybe there's a really positive reason for this, unless we can tap into that knowing and say, I think there is a reason, and if I stick through it long enough, I'm gonna find out. But it doesn't always feel that way, does it?
Right, right. So tell us why you wrote this book, Lead Yourself First. You know, I work with many people, as I'm sure you do, I know you do, and we run into people who are, you know, want to, let's just say, have their fingers in every pie, but they don't want to be accountable for it.
Yes.
And then you've got others who just take the leadership role. So tell us why you wrote the book.
Well, you know, Vicky, I wrote the book because I just think there are so many people that are yearning to be doing something different. And I know that that was my story. And I really believe that, you know, I had a message that I wanted to get out to the world. And, you know, I think that it's inspiring many people who relate to all the different stories in the book. And I think really the major reason for writing the book was when I came to the realization in my own life, and particularly in work, because work was so all-consuming, that I came to the point where I knew that I was paying a high emotional price for staying in a situation where I wasn't happy, and I didn't necessarily have the skills and the tools to take charge of myself. I didn't really know what to do, so I had to learn the hard way. And I just have found in my work and in writing this book and the comments people are giving me that, you know, they relate to it. They find themselves in the same predicament. So my book is offering people some new ways of looking at their life and their work and making change.
Right. Number one strategy, you say, for women to live the life they want is to create your own reality.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I think that it's really easy, of course, you know, for us to have, if we choose to have our reality defined for us. And all you have to do really is, I turn on the radio, listen to the newspaper, television, and there are all sorts of messages out there telling us what the world looks like right now. And, you know, it's true that statistics may not lie, but the fact is that there are many examples of people that have created their own reality regardless of the economy, the volatility, the uncertainty. And I think it's, you know, worthwhile noting that. And that's what I mean by defining what you want your own reality to look like. And I think we can all do that.
Yeah. I love some of the titles of the chapters in the book. One of them is, Why Should We Sip from a Teacup? when we can drink from a river.
Yes.
Tell us about that chapter.
Well, that actually is a quote from the character from the movie Roxanne, and Steve Martin so brilliantly played the role of the fire chief in that film. And that really was, it may sound odd to people, but that was a life-changing film for me, because I was sitting in Australia watching that film in a movie theatre in Sydney after feeling like I'd got kicked in the teeth trying to make a life for myself in the United States, and it didn't work out the way I wanted it to. But I just remember watching that film and becoming transfixed by the scenes in the movie and the dialogue, and in particular the fact that the movie was taking place in Nelson, British Columbia. And I was so drawn to the scenery and the beauty and, you know, just how magnificent it was that I vowed to myself I had to go to that place. And again, that's exactly what I did. So 3 years later, I found myself, you know, driving to Nelson, British Columbia from Vancouver, and it was just an amazing experience. But I just identified with the character, and I identified with where I was at in my life after having gone through one major disappointment and being inspired to try again and do something differently.
Well, do you know what inspired me to come check out Seattle? It was Sleepless in Seattle, right?
Oh, great.
So I can definitely relate to that. That place looks kind of interesting.
Yes.
And for you, it's 20-some years later. For me, it's 15 years later. So there we go.
Right.
So let's talk about this, because this is a huge thing that I see often. We, you know, and I'm guilty of it too, where we go through phases where we self-sabotage. And you say that our number one fear is fear of success. It's stronger than the fear of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and talk to us about
that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, first of all, the mind can't hold two opposing thoughts at the same time. So, you know, if you really think about it, how can you be in fear and be an opportunity at the same time? So your mind is going to choose one or the other. And I think that when I talk about the fear of success, again, that's what you just said about self-sabotage, that there are, you know, at a very deep level, and I studied some very interesting psychology to create that chapter and some literature that addresses the same topic. And again, it's whether you're, you know, male or female, it doesn't really make any difference. But there are some examples that I thought, wow, and they were true business examples of people that were unknowingly sabotaging their own success. So they were talking themselves out of situations, they were putting themselves down, and again, something I totally relate to, and we sometimes do this completely unconsciously, and we don't even realize that it's part of who we are, and that we perhaps have done this for years and years and years. So we either talk ourselves out of it, or we buy into somebody else's opinion of us that may not be the healthiest way of looking at ourselves. And, you know, there are saboteurs out there. I'm not saying everybody's like that, but there are people that don't have your best interests at heart. So when you start believing all of those messages, then you say, yep, success isn't for me, however you choose to define it. And, again, I think that that's a really, you know, unfortunate place to be, but it doesn't have to be that way.
Right. You know, one of the things that I think is hard to separate yourself from without some kind of backlash, and I say this because I've kind of experienced it myself many, many, many years ago, where I worked in a very toxic environment, and I just thought, I can't do this. So I'm just going to go in every morning and say good morning and, you know, be Miss Pleasant and just remove myself from all the drama and the gossip and the nastiness that's going on. And you have to do that if you want to lead yourself. But it's not always very easy. And other people don't always make it very comfortable for you to do that. So I wonder if you'd talk about that a little.
Well, it's true. And then, you know, exactly. I mean, that's where so many people find themselves. So I think really, you know, when let's put it down to these three options that we have. And if you look at it this way, I think it's a lot easier. So first of all, you can choose to accept a situation exactly the way it is. So you can accept the people as they are. You can accept all the toxic craziness going on all around you. And you can say to yourself, you know what, I can rise above it. I can accept what's going on. Or you can choose number two, to walk away. So you can choose to leave. But if you make that choice, which sometimes is our only choice for self-preservation, you may still find yourself going somewhere else and it feels like you've escaped, but then all the people that you left behind have followed you. And this time they show up in the shape of another body. So you haven't really learned anything. So if you're going to leave the situation, that's fine, but what am I going to learn? How am I going to be different next time? And really the next option is to change the way you respond to people and situations. So if you are going to stay, then knowing how to choose a different way of responding rather than reacting is, I think, the optimum choice.
Right.
But I've actually discovered that there is a fourth choice, and I think this is one that I hope most people don't choose, and that's to keep making yourself sick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Go ahead.
Dangerous place to be.
It is a very dangerous place to be, and it takes a lot of, you know, and if you choose to stay there and rise above it, it takes a lot of energy that maybe we could be putting to better use, so... I think an exit plan's a good strategy to have in a situation like that, too. You know, I mean, how many people do you know that you see in organizations that have quit and stayed, you know?
Exactly. I mean, and there, you know, and it's a very interesting thing, too, because it's a similar message for organizations, not just individuals. You know, with my work with the Lead Yourself First Institute, I think people that are dealing with the status quo, or preferring to stay with the status quo because it's more comfortable than creating change. And again, I think that there are definitely lessons for organizations in this book to take. And it can be, you know, of course, the easier way to stay comfortable by opting for the status quo. But what would happen if you did create change? What would happen if you did tap into the collective wisdom of the people around you who could be sitting on one brilliant idea that could revolutionize the way you do business within your own organization? And forget about all of what's going on around you and outside of your control. And again, coming back to my point about buying into the doom and gloom or the negativity, if we focus on what we can control, then our businesses, our lives, everything becomes that much easier to just focus on that circle of influence that we always can choose to do.
Right. Yeah, it's still one of my favorite takeaways from Dr. Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits,
yes.
The Circle of Influence. And I find myself periodically just drawing two big circles on my whiteboard and, you know, my circle of influence versus my circle of control. And it really helps me get clear about stuff.
That's true.
And talking of clarity, one of the things that you talk about consistently throughout the book on a wide range of topics is you must be clear. You must be clear on your intention. You must be clear on what you want to achieve.
Yes.
How do we get there?
Well, you know, it's not always easy because you can be, if you're clear on your intention, I mean, I think that's the first step. So you may not necessarily know exactly what your next career or business might look like, but if you're clear on your intention that it's not going to look like it looks right now, then that's the first step, is having that awareness. And sometimes the more you force yourself to try to figure out what it is that you want to do or where you want to be, I think it can be a very frustrating experience. But when you realize that there are certain things that you're really passionate about, really good at, really interested in, and it makes your heart sing, and when you do it, it doesn't feel like work, then you're on to something. And I think that that's a really good place to start. And to then start aligning yourself with people or with organizations that, you know, that you're interested in. And that is how you start to create that change in your own situation.
Right. And self-doubt, undoubtedly, is you know, something that gets in the way of many, many people.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little about this with my next guest, too. But I just wanted to get your take on self-doubt and how that stands in your way, what we can do about it.
Well, I think, again, and I'm so glad you asked that, and it applies to so many things, values, our relationship with money. And I think that it comes back to that earlier point that I made about self-sabotage, that, you know, is this real? I mean, is it real or imagined? You know, fear can be a very real thing. And, of course, we can manufacture a lot of our own fear. And the same thing can be said about self-doubt. And people don't realize that they're doing it. And it has consequences to all of our relationships. So just realize you've got to change that programming. we've got to reprogram ourselves and the way that we're talking to ourselves, and that internal dialogue is really where it all starts. And it's true, and it's a universal principle. So the more we start to believe as opposed to doubt, then again we can start creating change.
Right, and your book is full of stories that help us or encourage us to live larger. The book is called Lead Yourself First, Breakthrough Strategies to Live the Life You Want. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Michelle?
Well, I would, firstly, I'd love to encourage people to buy the book, and, you know, they can do so through Amazon or from my own website, michelleray.com. And I just really would like to encourage people to really dig deep and start looking at their own situations and just to take incremental steps. And I think that would be the best thing that I can say, is when you really know yourself, that's the first step, and then start taking small incremental steps to create change, rather than becoming overwhelmed and, you know, throwing out the baby with the bathwater. So just do it one step at a time, and you will be amazed at what you can achieve, and it gives you the confidence to keep on going.
There we go. I still keep a plastic bag full of little bites of bark that a beaver bit off before he pulled down a whole great big tree, to remind me of just what you said: one step at a time, one bite at a time.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate your time. Good book. I enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so much, Vicky.
And the book again is Lead Yourself First. You can find more about Michelle at michelleray.com and about her leadership organization. And there are also some great articles up there. So michelleray.com, Michelle is double L. Please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Eric Maisel. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to BioClean, specializing in incident cleanup, we cover the world of animals. This week, May 26th, it's the last Sunday of the month, and that means it's a shelter, rescue sanctuary, and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll talk with Molly Wood Avian Sanctuary. I'll follow up with the Macaw Sanctuary in Carnation about the anonymous noise complaints. We'll visit with All Breed Equine Rescue, plus some surprises. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Coming up June 3rd on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Feeding the Hungry Ghost with Ellen Kaner, who takes an irreverent approach to bring reverence into everyday living. Tune into Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. And check out conversationslive.net for more than 200 podcasts.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Following the herd is fine until they lead you off a cliff. Think for yourself. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest now is somebody who we've had on the show a couple of times. He's a prolific author. He's written more than 40 books. His new book is called Making Your Creative Mark, 9 Keys to Achieving Your Artistic Goals. Eric Mazel, PhD, is America's foremost creativity coach, and he's written, as I said, more than 40 books, including Coaching the Artist Within and The Van Gogh Blues. He's a print columnist for Professional Artist Magazine, a blogger for Fine Art America and Psychology Today. And he spends his time coaching individuals, training creativity coaches, and lecturing internationally. He lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. Eric Mazel, welcome.
Hi, Vicky. How are you?
I'm very good and pleased to have you back. Awesome book. I already heard from somebody this morning that they're going to go out and get this just based on my recommendation. So,
excellent. One sale.
Hey, everyone helps.
Everyone helps. It's the long tail, I think it's called.
There you go. So, you've written so much on creativity and the psychology around creativity. Tell me why you wrote this book. What's different about this one?
Well, the challenges never end, and my work with clients continues, and I just keep learning new things. And actually, not so much new things, it's the things that I've learned get reinforced by working with new clients. Some of the keys, like the mind key, which is the first key, the idea that we're so self-unfriendly and the things that we say to ourselves don't serve us, that just keeps getting reinforced. So I wanted to repeat some of my messages, but also add a lot of new practical sort of 10-tip lists to help people actually get over some of these challenges.
Yeah, and this is what I love about your book, because you provide such practical tools and resources to help us through this process. I myself was feeling a little stuck in a couple of areas over the last couple of months on a specific project, and I kept shoving it in the drawer. You know how that goes, right? I'll do that one later. And your book has inspired me to dig it out and put it on the front shelf again.
Excellent.
So talk to us a little bit about, I wanted to talk a little bit about confidence, because you, as you say, break up the book into the 9 key areas. I think the confidence key is something that affects many different people and on many different levels throughout the creative process. And you talk about manifesting that confidence. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. It's all of these subjects are subtle, and many creative and performing artists, because they have day jobs and second careers, they often look confident in their other lives. I mean, they may be a psychotherapist or a waiter or whatever, and they look confident in those jobs, primarily because in a certain sense they don't matter as much as their own creative efforts. So they may, you know, spend $2 million of their company's budget during the day and not blink and feel perfectly confident, and then come home and not be able to send out an email about their poem because their poem matters to them so much. So one of the points in that chapter is that even though we may think we're pretty confident in certain areas of our lives, we have to notice if we're actually feeling confident with respect to our creativity and with respect to our marketing of our creative projects. If we're not feeling confident there, then we have to use the vernacular, take it until we make it. We have to act confidently, because the world just doesn't appreciate a non-confident person. It just turns up its nose at somebody who presents herself without confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to act confidently if we want to have a chance at success, even if we're not feeling all that confident.
Right. You say that a lack of confidence often plays itself out as boundary issues, you know, in bad relationships or volatile relationships or, you know, addictions. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would. Explain
sure,
what you mean.
It's really very straightforward. If I don't feel equal to turning to my novel today because I'm a tricky creature, I don't want to say to myself, I'm not going to write my novel today, I don't feel equal to it, because that would harm our ego. So rather than saying that straightforward thing, I don't want to work on my novel, we go look for a drama. We go look for some distraction. We, of course, check our email one more time. but it's drama that we often turn to, because creative people have big appetites, fantasy life, all kinds of things that incline them towards drama to begin with. And that's fine if the drama turns itself into writing a great drama, but if these dramatic needs turn into, you know, crazy relationships, then that's what takes over. Just as if the appetite turns into addiction, that's what takes over. And we know that addictive tendencies and addictive problems are a great challenge for an awful lot of creative people.
Mm.
So by needing to find a way to excuse ourselves for not doing the work, we often turn to things that don't serve us.
Right, right. So how can we boost our confidence? You have some ways in the book that you share, but tell us a couple of ways we can boost our confidence.
Well, there are many ways. One is to remind ourselves of our successes, and sometimes that's hard to do because we may not have had that many successes either in doing the work or in the marketplace, but often we can remember those moments of success, those periods of success. So reminding ourselves that we've had successes can help. Firming up our identity as an artist is a whole other chapter on identity, but that connects. We are more confident as a creative person if we actually wear the mantle of that identity. I was at a writer's conference once where I had given a keynote, and then I was sitting in the audience listening to the next keynote speaker, and he asked a simple question. There were 500 writers in the room. How many of you identify as a writer? And of the 500 people in the room, two hands went up, mine and another person's. It just shows what a lack of confidence comes from not having that identity piece in place. So saying the simple thing, I'm a writer, saying it out loud, but certainly saying it internally, saying I'm an artist, that helps boost confidence. So those are a couple of the ideas.
Right. Another area you talked about I think is key, and I realized this. I used to meet every month with a writer friend of mine, sold hundreds of articles. But we both had this tendency to have this perfectionist streak and not want to let things go until we thought they were perfect, and of course they never are. You say don't be concerned about whether you're going to sell. Focus on, don't attach to the outcomes.
Absolutely. And it's another subtle point, because I want to be clear that I'm saying absolutely invest in your work. You want to have ambitions. You want to have dreams. But then you want to show up because you have those ambitions and dreams while not attaching to the outcome. The truth of process is that only a percentage of our work is going to work. That's the truth of process. Nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to think that they might spend 2 years writing a novel that doesn't work, but that's process. Pundits who claim to know will say that Beethoven's first, third, fifth, seventh, and ninth symphonies are better than his second, fourth, sixth, and eighth. And I don't know if that's true, but I know you can't do nine without eight.
You
can't do eight without seven. You can't skip the things that don't work. That's what's in everybody's fantasy. That's in everybody's heart. I want to skip the things that don't work, and you can't. All you can do is show up. And if your percentage is 30% excellent work, so be it. If it's 60% excellent, whatever it is, it's not 100%. It's not going to be. That's just not. No person who's ever walked the face of the earth has had 100%. Think of, you know, Edison and the electric light.
Right.
You need 18,000 wrong filaments before you get to tungsten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to accept that there are mistakes and messes and problems and challenges associated with the process. If you're a perfectionist, which is just an anxiety state, if you're anxious about getting things right, then you need some anxiety management strategies to reduce your anxiety so that you feel more comfortable being normal.
Right.
Having a normal percentage of successes, whatever that percentage is.
Well, I want to talk a little about anxiety. We need to take a very quick break, but you say we need to stop being surprised by anxiety because it's going to be there. So let's take a quick break and we'll talk about that when we come back. My guest is Eric Mazel. His book is called Making Your Creative Mark, 9 Keys to Achieving Your Artistic Goals. Please do stay with us.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL. Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
More choices, more topics, more shows. One station. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. We are talking about making your creative mark with Eric Maisel. He has 9 keys to achieving your artistic goals. Great new book. Always, I'm a huge fan of Eric's work. He's been on the show a couple of times before. And one of the most prolific authors that we've had on. talks a lot about creativity and the psychology around it. And before the break, you talked about anxiety. Yep. And I wanted to talk about that from a creative perspective, because you say we need to stop being surprised by anxiety.
Yeah, it is funny. Well, let me give a couple of headlines. The first is that the creative process is one choice after another. That's what it is. You put the red in or you put the blue in. You put a comment or you don't put the comment. You send your character to Paris or to Tanzania. These are all choices. And choosing provokes anxiety. Even simple choosing, like, you know, should I have the good-tasting cereal or the good-for-me cereal? All of these, even these little choices, provoke a little anxiety. The creative process is one choice after another. So anxiety threads through the process forever. And anytime you start a new project or you don't know what to do next and you have to make a choice and you're not sure if that choice is going to lead you in the wrong direction, anxiety is going to well up. So it should stop surprising us that we get anxious, and we should finally be able to identify anxiety as the culprit when we're, so to speak, blocked, or we're avoiding our work, or we're resistant to our work. We should name it as anxiety. That's almost certainly what it is. And then turn to one of our tried and true anxiety management strategies, which almost no one actually owns. Almost no one actually has an anxiety management strategy that they know how to use in the moment. They may have a full-on meditation practice or something, mm-hmm. and that's wonderful at, you know, 4 in the morning when they do their meditation, but it's usually not very useful when you're trying to talk to your literary agent and your anxiety is welled up.
Right.
You know, so I have a whole book on that, Mastering Creative Anxiety, in which there's a menu of maybe 20 anxiety management strategies. And that there are so many is a great thing, because there's something that's going to work for everybody. So we need anxiety management strategies for the anxiety that's coming.
Right. So many things I want to ask you, but we've only got literally just about a minute and a half left, Eric. So let's pick this one, rekindling passion. Give us some tips about how we can rekindle passion.
Well, that's in the context of discipline versus passion. Often creative people put all of their eggs into the am I disciplined or am I not disciplined basket. Pavarotti has a quote I like, which is people say I'm disciplined, but it's not discipline, it's devotion, and there's a big difference. If we're not devoted to our work, if we're not in love with it, if we're not feeling passionate about it, if we're not curious about it, if we're not enthusiastic, we're probably not going to do it. So we need to pay attention to whether we're in love with our work or not, even when we're hating it. We have to be in love with our work even
right.
when we're hating it.
Right.
And one quick tip as to how to rekindle passion is to remind yourself what you fell in love with when you were 5 or 6 or 7 or 8. Those were almost the purest loves, when we fell in love with reading or images up on a screen or music or telescopes or something. If we can remind ourselves of what that pure love felt like, maybe we can rekindle that now.
Okay, so one of the things I want to let listeners know is that you have at the back of the book, Create Your Artist Plan, and a refresher on 97 creativity tips, which I think is awesome. I thank you for being with us today, Eric Maisel. Awesome work, as usual. Listeners can find out more about Eric at ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. And the book again that we talked about today, Making Your Creative Mark, 9 Keys to Achieving Your Artistic Goals. And I want to thank you for being with us today. You can find out more about us at conversationslive.net. If you missed any of today's show, you can catch us there. And the podcast will be up by end of day tomorrow for sure. conversationslive.net. You can tweet us at Vicky St. Clair, put a message on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or email us at info@conversationslive.net. That's info@conversationslive.net. And if you don't like emailing, you can always call us, 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. Thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate your time. Until next week, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Coming up June 3rd on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Feeding the Hungry Ghost with Ellen Kaner, who takes an irreverent approach to bring reverence into everyday living. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. And check out conversationslive.net for more than 200 podcasts.